beer and tossing the bottle into the trash. He can't control the weather. But he's still coming tomorrow, right? No, not until Friday, unless... She scrolled around on her phone and saw that the forecast was even worse for Friday. I don't know. We can get most of the house done before bedtime today, between us. If we can get Daddy to come down tomorrow, I bet he can help us wrap up a day early. Brad leaned back to take a peek at her phone. How bad does it look? There's a storm front headed right for us. Tell you what, I'll give him a call and see how he wants to play it. The rest of y'all, get your asses in gear. I won't be a minute. Knowing him, he probably won't pick up. She left the kitchen for the communal living area, then climbed the stairs, as if she needed some privacy. She didn't, but she took it anyway. As predicted, Chuck didn't answer. No great shock. Half the time he didn't hear his phone, and half the time he forgot to carry it. She left him a message. Hey, Daddy, it's me. I know you plan to show up on Friday, but I was wondering if you couldn't drive down tomorrow instead. The weather's going to get bad tonight, and worse tomorrow. We may have to skip some of the house's exterior stuff, but we'll still have a hell of a haul, I promise. This was a good buy, and it'll pay off, even without the bay windows and whatnot, so don't worry about that. Anyway, call me, would you? We should talk. You should come out tomorrow. She paused, and then said quickly, We're all tired of camping here at this crazy-ass house, and we want to come home. She ended the call and put the phone in her back pocket. A dull drone in the background turned out to be the rain kicking up again. She strolled to the broken hallway window and stood in the spray of water and chilly air that splattered through the jagged pane of glass. There was no dead soldier standing in the cemetery below, just a tarp weighted down by rocks, covering the spot where he'd been laid to rest in a shallow grave under someone else's headstone. Were you Abigail's first lover? What happened to you? The house didn't answer, and neither did any helpful ghost. With that thought, she turned around and saw that Hazel's door was closed again. The trunk that had held it propped open was now sitting outside, in the hall. Dahlia approached it and nudged it aside with her foot. It was heavy, but it moved. The lovely doorknob wiggled, but didn't turn. Hazel had locked her out again. I've got to get in there someday, Aunt Hazel, Dahlia said to the closed room. Please don't make me destroy this door to do it. I'd rather not ruin anything I don't have to, she said under her breath. But when she thought about it and tested the sound of the words again, she wasn't so certain. I wish we could save this house. Didn't taste right anymore. She tried again. Fine. The house can go to hell. But you seem all right, Aunt Hazel. I apologize to you for everything that's coming. I've already apologized to the house, but if you're hanging around, and if you still care for the place, then you get an apology, too. That's literally all I can do for you now. If Daddy was here, he'd say it's more than I ought to do. She looked down at the trunk, pushed out into the hall where it clogged the thoroughfare. One heavy corner had shoved up against the rotted carpet runner and torn a great hole in it, leaving a drag mark in the old boards underneath. She bent down to open it again and examine the contents in daylight. The flimsy old latch hadn't mysteriously locked since last night, so that was something. Not everything closed for good when he looked away. This time, she saw the same paperbacks as before. And something else. Atop the jumbled pile of romances, gothic and otherwise, rested an overstuffed envelope. Dahlia picked it up. It smelled like mildew and dried flower petals. Inside the folded papers were as fragile as tissue, brittle and brown with age. My dearest Gregory, I want you to know that I'm yours, every inch of me. But my father's starting to wonder, and I fear he will give you grief when you come to get me. The handwriting was slender and tidy and very precise. The words were composed in pen, but the letters had faded to the off-brown color, so very common to old missives, courtesy of all the iron in the ink. Dahlia closed the trunk lid and sat down on top of it. Not our type, as Mother puts it. But how would she know? She does not see the best parts of you, as I do. If Father were not in the way, I think she might come around, in time. But you know she'll never stand against him. No one ever does. Not even Hazel, who is quite fond of you and thinks that you and I would make a very nice match. That's how she put it when I pressed her on the matter. She's concerned for me, for both of us, I'm sure. But this is not the time to dally. Time is running short, and in this case we must risk asking forgiveness instead of permission. You know as well as I do that we must risk it soon. Come another few weeks, and people will be counting the months since our honeymoon and raising their eyebrows high.
Doll, what are you doing?
Gabe. She hadn't heard him come up the stairs, nor down the hall, nor to the spot where he was now standing over her shoulder. But he hadn't startled her. Not exactly. She looked up and gently waved the old paper. Aunt Hazel locked us out again, but she left a little present. She pointed to the signature at the bottom on the back side. Abigail's love letters to Gregory.
Gregory who?
I have no idea. Lovers don't generally use their full given names when they write back and forth.
Not an email, but this was like the olden days, right?
Not even in the olden days. She didn't date these either. I don't know if she mailed them or snuck them out of the house through a friend or a servant or something. But Gregory, that's the name of our soldier downstairs. I'd bet money on it. I'd also bet money. She closed the trunk and sat back on the lid, still scanning the narrow lines of penmanship. They both knew she was pregnant. There's a bit in here about counting the months after the honeymoon. Gabe crooked his neck to see the letter better. He began to sit down beside her on the trunk lid, then changed his mind. It was old, and it might not hold them both. He leaned against the wall and folded his arms.
What else did the letter say?
She flipped through them, skimming quickly. Oh, the usual, lots of my darling, my dearest, and promises of eternal love. She was worried about how the family would take it, so maybe her dad really did fly off the handle and do something rash. But I wonder why... Dahlia carefully checked each page. I wonder why only Abigail's letters are collected here. You'd think she would have saved his letters in return, wouldn't you?
Could be there weren't any. Or maybe he gave these back to her, Gabe proposed, because the feeling was a mutual. Dads have killed boyfriends for less than knocking up their daughters, since the beginning of history, I'm pretty sure. Maybe that's how he died.
Dahlia stood and put the letters back into the trunk, closing it up and fastening the latches without locking them. True, but if he knew she was pregnant, you'd think he'd whip out the shotgun and force them to make it legal. Regardless, could you do me a favor and go stuff this trunk up in the attic, out of the way?
Why me?
Because you are big and strong, and I am small and super tired from last night. Please? I just don't want to trip over it all day as we start the breakdown. Her phone picked that moment to ring, so she asked him, please, one more time, and answered it. Hey, Daddy, there you are.
Here I am. What's this about closing up shop a day early?
She shooed Gabe away. Right, about that. She gave him the breakdown on the weather. She wandered back to the broken window while she talked. And in case you don't believe me, can you hear that?
Hear what?
Rain, Dad. Lots and lots of rain. I'm afraid you won't be able to bring in the trailer if it gets too much soggier, and things will only get worse through tomorrow night. If we weren't on a time limit, that'd be one thing.
Technically, we have until the 15th.
She shook her head, like he could hear it rattle. Down across the grounds she stared, picking at the broken glass with her fingernail. I know, but nobody wants to stay another night. That's the truth of it, okay? This place isn't... She struggled with how much to tell him and how much to keep to herself.
Let's Just say it's not healthy, and now that I've spent some time here, I totally understand why Augusta wants to see it leveled.
Seriously, you? Miss Savior of the old houses?
Yes. Seriously, me. Next time we're all sitting around drinking, I'll tell you about the ghosts. I'll take rats and bugs and bats any day of the week.
Since when are you afraid of ghosts?
He asked, half joking and half wondering in earnest.
In our line of work, I think you'd get used to them.
I've been afraid of ghosts since I met the ones here in the Withrow house. There's one in particular, this awful girl. It's weird and bad and... Let's just get the house into pieces and hit the road as soon as possible. Please? He was quiet, and then he asked,
How much have you sorted out already?
The carriage house and the barn are all done, except for that metal roof, but we've barely started on the house. We'll get everything but the last of the fixtures by tonight. The last thing we want to do is sleep here without power.
Is that bad, huh?
And then some. But nothing tried to murder us or scare us half to death last night, so we can swing another one, if we all stick together.
What do you mean, stick together?
I mean, we're all sleeping in the living room, with the lights on.
No shit,
he sounded completely baffled. No shit, Daddy.
All right, if it's that important to you, I'll pack up and see what I can do. I'll get one of the guys to watch this shop. And head down first thing in the morning. Will that make you happy?
Yes. Oh, God, yes, it totally will. The boys will be thrilled. Thank you, Daddy.
No problem, baby. But what about that cemetery? Will I be able to get the trailer up to the house? You said it might be a problem.
Fuck the cemetery. Drive a tank over it for all I care.
Wait, what? Did you talk to old Lady Withrow about it?
She stared out the window, down at the place where an open grave was covered by a tarp, collecting a puddle. I talked to her, and she said it wasn't a real cemetery. Her grandpa owned a monument company and had a funny sense of humor. Apparently it was all part of some neighborhood-wide Halloween party back around World War I.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Well, that's what she said. She swore on a stack of Bibles ain't nobody buried there.
Do you believe her?
To lie to Dad or not to lie to Dad? Dahlia hedged her bets and told half the truth.
I don't know. It sounds crazy, but it's within the bounds of Tennessee crazy. I looked it up online.
That was a fib, but not quite a lie. And it's not an open cemetery, so far as the county is concerned.
If anybody's buried there... You couldn't prove it without a shovel.
That's a lovely image. Thank you, dear. I'm here for you, Pops. Just get down here, would you? We'll figure everything out when you arrive.
I'll drag out a shorter trailer for the Bobcat, if you think we can do without the extra storage and the one ton. You pack your truck so tight they squeak. Do you think we can make it work?
She mentally mapped the remaining space in the two trucks she had on hand. I think so, yeah. Bring straps, and we might be able to roll up the copper roof and tie it up. We still need to grab the stained glass, and there's a lot of it. But we'll have room. The Rose Transom can ride shotgun between me and Brad if it has to.
All right. Then that's what I'll do. If worst comes to worst, I can always drive back down before the 15th for one more go.
With a plan in place, they said their goodbyes. Dahlia hung up, relieved that he was coming, and wondering... What the hell she was going to tell him about the tarp outside if they didn't have the time or weather to finish covering up poor Gregory? She was doing her dad a favor, really. He was happier not knowing. She was sure of it. He could find out after the fact when Bobby or Gabe inevitably spilled the beans, but by then it'd all be over, and he could freak out all he liked. A prickly feeling tickled the back of her neck. She turned around and saw nothing. And no one. So it must have been the atmosphere. The broken window would let in anything, even those curly little drafts of cold, wet air. Just standing there beside it, she could almost see her breath. Temperature's dropping, she muttered to herself. I ought to throw some plastic up here before some birds or bats find their way inside. Or more bugs. As far as she knew, there hadn't been a good freeze yet. She'd been smacking mosquitoes left and right outside, which implied the thermostat hadn't fallen that far yet. What if it froze overnight? Would they get some snow? Or would all the mud freeze? She shuddered at the thought of throwing blocks of frozen mud on top of the old soldier. But if it came to that... ugh. Back downstairs, the guys were ready to get moving. "I talked to Dad," she informed them. "He's coming first thing in the morning, so let's cross our fingers and hope it stays too warm for ice." "Preach it," Bobby muttered. "Let's quit burning daylight, huh? We got a shit ton of work to do if we're going to have the house ready before Uncle Chuck gets here." Dahlia laughed. "Who are you, and what have you done with the real Bobby Dutton?" "I'm a man who's had just about enough of this bullshit house and its bullshit ghosts who like to jump you in the bathroom and give you bullshit dreams." She almost asked about his dreams, but didn't. "Once again, we are on the same page. If I'm not careful, I might forget you're a lazy douchebag. And if I'm not careful, I might forget you're a controlling bitch." "We'll have to be on our guard, then." She put her hands on her hips. "All right, fellas, let's spread out and wreak some havoc. Leave the electrical fixtures for now, and leave the plumbing in the bathrooms alone. They don't have anything we want. But tonight, before bedtime, we're turning off the water, okay? Nobody gets a shower, because we're safer without them." Brad frowned. "What about the toilet?" "If it's yellow, let it mellow. We'll fill up a few buckets to flush and leave them in the tub. But once that's done, I want the water off." "Where's Maine?" Bobby asked. "I haven't the foggiest. Check around outside. It can't be far off. But there's no rush for now. As long as you get it done before dark, I'll be happy." Dog tired and desperately wanting a nap, she tried not to sound exhausted when she continued. "So, here's where we're at. I want Gabe and Bobby on the stone mantels and surrounds because those things are fucking heavy. Brad, me and you will start tackling the smaller things, like some of the stained glass and the gothic windows above the kitchen."
"Are you calling me a puss?" he objected.
"No, I'm saying more than two people on those stone surrounds will be too many cooks in the kitchen. Bobby and Gabe, if you need help, you holler for us."
"Yes, ma'am," Gabe promised.
"When we're all done, hopefully before lunch, but afterwards, if it comes to that, we'll pool our elbow grease and start grabbing whatever's upstairs, then work our way downstairs and then to the floors."
"Give me your keys, and I'll pull both trucks up as close as I can get them," Bobby offered. "Some of that old shit won't stand for getting wet, and the marble won't travel across the yard too well."
"I like it." She fished her keys out of her pocket and chucked them into his open palm. "Bring those bad boys around and haul in what's left of the tools. Let's make this happen." Gabe took his father's keys and made for the other truck. Brad turned to Dahlia and asked,
"Got anything in particular in mind for me? I don't know where to start."
"You could start in the kitchen if you want. We've eaten through most of our food, and the rest will fit in the coolers. The cabinets and appliances look like shit, but double check and make sure all the cabinets are sad mid-century particle board. If some of the original stuff is there and it's solid, let me know. Check the dumbwaiter and find out what's at the bottom. Go exploring along those back stairs and see if there's anything worth grabbing, and look under the house while you're at it. Gas fixtures are fair game, so grab them if they're good, because the gas has been off for years. Everything in this house has been electric since the 60s. If the fixtures are newer or they're rewired for electricity, don't touch them until we've closed down the breakers." His chin was up and down, following along with her off-the-cuff instructions and getting the idea.
"And if I run across anything, but I'm not sure, I'll set it aside and ask you later."
"Good man. Yes, do that."
"Where are you starting?"
"Upstairs," she said firmly. "I'm working top to bottom. But first, I'm going to do something about the hole in the hallway window."
"Why?" he asked. "We're just going to tear it out anyway."
She went past him to one of the bags of tools and assorted useful items.
A roll of duct tape was right on top. The windows will be among the last things we yank, along with the electrics. There's no need to let the floors up there get soaked, on the off chance we can salvage what's underneath that god-awful runner. Honestly, I should have done something about it sooner. She collected the tape and a cheap painter's tarp, then took a box cutter and carved off a large square. But once I get that patched up, I'll make sure there's nothing worth taking from the attic, then start working my way through the second floor. When you're done in the kitchen, you can help me with the furniture. I want to take some of the things in the master bedroom, and we'll need to get inside Hazel's room, which may or may not require the Sawzall.
Hazel's room?
He gave her a funny look. Oh, the locked one up there. It was open last night, and me and Gabe took a look around. But it's locked now, so unless she sees fit to open it up again, we'll have to cut the door. I'd rather not, but I guess it's up to her. She said that last part loudly, in case Hazel was listening.
You are so weird.
I'm weird. Should I bring up your speculative grave robbing again? His face went sour.
I wish she wouldn't.
She stopped. All right, then, I won't. But we need to do something about that tarp and that body before my dad gets here. And you offered to fill the grave back in. Pack it down good and throw some rocks over it. If you can find any gravel, that'd be perfect. Daddy might need to drive over it when he gets here.
That sounds awful.
Then pitch me something else, she commanded. You're the one who made this mess.
Do you think Chuck will fire me if he finds out about it?
No, she didn't. Her dad was the softest touch this side of the river, but she was annoyed with Brad, and she didn't feel like reassuring him. I don't know, man. Either he'll laugh it off, or he'll call the cops and pretend he's never heard of you. So if I were you, I'd bury the poor guy again and keep my mouth shut. She left him and went to see about the upstairs window, stopping by the bathroom to grab a towel someone had left behind on a hook. Carefully, she swabbed the damp glass, losing another few shards in the process. They toppled out into the rain, breaking on the ground below, but she didn't hear them. The rain drowned everything out, leaving the sky too gray for morning. Even though the painter's tarp was light and opaque, once it was taped into place, the hallway felt unnaturally dark. She stood with her back to the window and listened to the sounds of the trucks barely rumbling over the rain. Downstairs, the clatter of cabinetry suggested Brad had started his tasks, and if the sound of truck engines straining against the wet grass and mud meant anything, Bobby and Gabe were moving as well. It was time for Dahlia to get started, too. A gust of wind rattled hard against the plastic patch, but didn't strain the tape too much. The attic it is, Dahlia concluded, and returned the now damp towel to the main bathroom down the hall. Before leaving, she paused and looked around the violent pink bathroom. There was nothing in particular she wanted to keep, and she sure as hell didn't want to waste time pulling pink subway tiles down from the walls. Maybe if there was literally nothing left to do, and she couldn't sleep. She stared into the mirror, daring it to show her something other than her own damn face. I'm on to you, Abigail, she told her reflection. You can't slow me down. You can't stop me either, and that means you're going to have to leave soon. You don't have to like it, but there it is. Whatever's on the other side of wherever you are these days, you have to go find it. Out in the hall, a click and a creak echoed off the paneling. She popped her head around the bathroom door. It looked like Hazel had decided to cooperate, because her bedroom was open once more. Thanks, she said to anyone who might be listening. You're saving me a lot of trouble, and saving your door a date with a power saw.
Dahlia,
Bobby called loudly from downstairs. You talking to someone up there? No one but myself, she replied in kind. Dahlia's phone said it was barely breakfast time, but the dull gray light indoors felt like the far edge of dusk, and inside the narrow stairwell leading to the attic, she was climbing almost blind. But she knew the way by now, and didn't even hit her head when she reached the trap door. She pushed it up with her elbow and climbed into the angled space of wide, exposed rafters. And bat shit. And rat shit, she remembered as she scattered some with the toe of her work boot. Your fault. The message was carved deep and wide, but that didn't make it true. She didn't know what had really happened to Abigail, and everyone who did was dead, or disinclined to talk about it. Maybe the girl had her reasons. Maybe she'd been off her rocker. But the lovingly penned notes from the trunk nagged at her, all of them from Abigail, none of them from Gregory in return. A crack of thunder shook the house, rattling the attic windows in their rot-softened frames. Wind whistled through the chips and past the rotted, splintered fascia beams, and the drafty, unsealed room felt even draftier. Dahlia hugged herself and thought about a hoodie. No, the flannel ought to be enough, once she got moving. It was only wet and gusty, and that made everything feel colder than it really was, and she wasn't moving yet. She was standing in an empty attic, peering into corners. She already knew there was nothing worth salvaging up there, but she couldn't admit to herself that she was looking for something else. Hints, or more hidden compartments. She didn't see any such thing. She saw her breath, coiling in white. She saw a boy-shaped shadow flicker behind a support column. Dahlia froze. If she was patient, he might. Yes, a round head, or the suggestion of one. The impression of eyes, sunken and dark, in a face that was no more substantial than a shadow. Buddy, she breathed. Is that you? She took a step toward the hiding spirit, but the boy-like wisp shuddered and threatened to vanish. No, please don't go. I won't hurt you. I couldn't if I wanted to. Just so we're clear, though. You know, don't you? She shoved her hands up under her armpits and shivered. You're dead. You've been dead a long time, but you weren't... You didn't... You were a grown-ass man when you died, she wanted to say. For whatever reason, she didn't. It was easier to think of this faint, cowering thing as a child. It might have been deliberate. Dead children aren't as scary as dead men. Isn't that what she'd told Gabe? Or had Gabe told her that? Her head felt uncomfortably full again, all that spun cotton crammed between her ears. She opened her mouth, yawned, and popped them. Buddy didn't acknowledge anything she said. He only stared, and when she made any motion toward him, he wobbled in distress. But he was letting her see him. He was hiding, but he wasn't running away. Is this? She bobbed her head toward the message on the floor. Directed at you? Did Abigail blame you for what happened? The boy's head shot up, but he wasn't looking at Dahlia anymore. He was looking at the far wall. The rumbling sky was throwing lightning now, and it was flashing so bright in the dim space that she could see a vague black mist over there. It swirled and congealed. In the middle, there were two dark places that might have stood for eyes. Buddy? She looked back to the support where the little thing had stashed itself, but he was gone. She was alone with this new thing, and it didn't look happy. It grew before her eyes until it was much larger than a person, much darker, much more hateful, much less solid. A roaring hum vibrated between her ears, and in that hum, she heard words, but not clearly. She heard them the way you think you hear words when the radio is stuck between two stations and only white noise comes through. She began to back away, but changed her mind. She needed to get back to the hatch. There was nothing here for Music City, no good wood to pull from the floors, and the windows were all broken and splintered. There was nothing to be saved, not a tiny ghost boy, and not this swirling beast that fixed her in its sights, if it even had eyes at all. It did not feel like daytime, It did not feel like just past breakfast when the power was on and the house was full of people who were awake and working hard, working fast. This thing in front of her, it should have come at night, but it had come after dawn, when everyone else was downstairs. It had come with a cold, stale smell like frozen pond water, thick with mud. It spread with a viscous, rolling, billowing sprawl as slow and thick as oil in winter. Dahlia could not freeze. The hatch was only a few yards away. Something buzzed in her jeans pocket. She tagged it, wondering what it could possibly be. Her phone was in the living area, left in one of her bags. This was too small for that anyway. It fit in the almost decorative slot below her right hip. Harder and harder it shook until its presence was painful against her hip bone. She jammed two fingers in there and yanked out the small metal pendulum she'd found in Hazel's room. Once exposed, it lunged toward the hatch. Dahlia barely caught it by the bauble at the other end of its chain, but she did catch it, and she let it draw her to that hatch within mere feet of the angry thing with claws that could carve wood like a holiday turkey. She flung herself down the stairs and dropped the trapdoor behind her, but it flew open again, and that chilled, weird stink blasted down into the corridor. The pendulum said to keep moving, and Dahlia couldn't argue with it. She followed it into the hall, a couple of doors down, and into Hazel's room, where the door slammed shut and locked itself behind her. The door shook and rattled, clutching the pendulum like it could protect her. Dahlia stood before the dresser and stared back at that locked door, panting, even though she hadn't run far, and she wasn't really tired. She was scared for her life, because whatever Abigail was, she could haunt by day and slice up floors, so why not skin and bone? A series of hard blows rained against Hazel's door, echoing through the whole house. Dahlia was sure of this, and someone must have known that there were bad things afoot. Her voice shook when she said, "Fuck this!" But the door held, despite her lack of faith, and she squeezed that little steel pendulum she'd taken from Hazel's drawer. She looked down at that drawer, and then up at the mirror. Whatever was beating on the door gave it another half dozen blows. Dahlia was positive that the force would push it off the frame and send it crashing inside. But she was wrong. The door stayed where it was. Dahlia was standing before the mirror. In the mirror, she looked ragged and wild. In the mirror, Hazel Withrow looked calm and barely dead at all. Hazel wore a sharp suit of salmon polyester. Her hair was streaked with silver, and her glasses were shaped like cat eyes. Her fingers were long, and they sported several expensive rings. Her bones were thin, and the pleats in her pants were as crisp as the last day she pressed them. "She can't come in." "That's why you keep it locked," Dahlia stated, no question of it, though it sounded raspy coming from her fright-stiffened throat. "Anyone would go mad in this house without a refuge." "Sister, I hear you." "She's weaker in the day. Not weak, but weaker. You've worn her out, for now."
"Hazel," she said, "what do I do?"
"Do your job. But don't stay here tonight. Find a hotel and return in the morning. You won't be safe when the sun goes down."
"Aunt Hazel, please tell me," she tried.
But there was no one in the mirror.
Dahlia was alone.
Brad and Bobby were beating on the door, calling her name.
"I'm in here," she said.
Then again, louder and stronger.
"I'm in here!
Open the door!"
Brad sounded as frantic as she'd felt 90 seconds ago.
"I'm trying!"
She grabbed the knob and yanked it. It rolled over, easy as pie. She drew back the door and stared wildly at all three of them. Gabe had just joined the party, having run up the stairs sweating and covered with rain.
"Doll,"
he asked, toppling toward her, pushing Brad and his father aside.
"The door slammed shut behind me, but I'm fine. I'm shook up, is all."
Bobby rubbed his hands on his pants. They were red and rough, and the knuckles were chapped from where he'd been banging on the door. As hard as Abigail had, almost.
"What the hell just happened? We heard you running downstairs and something banging around."
She looked out into the hall, both ways. Seeing nothing, she waved them all inside Hazel's room. The guys filed in anxiously behind her. She closed the door and leaned her back against it, pretending she was only tired and winded.
"We're all safe in here,"
she said to herself, but she let them hear it. Her voice was normal again. She forced it to be.
"Safer than we are out there.
Hazel did something to the room. She made it a sanctuary, and Abigail can't come inside. She can't touch us."
"Abigail was in the attic?" asked Bobby.
"She chased me out. Hazel opened the door and let me come in here. Abigail tried to follow."
She rubbed her hands together, then on her jeans. When she did that, she could pretend they weren't shaking.
But she didn't. She couldn't.
"You sure you're all right?"
Brad asked. She might have asked it in return. He looked as frazzled as she felt. Or worse. God, she hoped she didn't look that frayed around the edges. Somebody had to hold it together, because the job wasn't done yet, and she couldn't walk away. She couldn't even run.
"I've been better," she told him, in case there was any solidarity in suffering.
Anything else would have looked like a lie.
"But whatever's in the house, whoever's in this house, I've been calling her Abigail, but she's only a shadow, only some weird leftover. She hasn't heard any of you, has she?"
"She about scared the shit out of me," Bobby complained. "Does that count?"
"But she didn't touch you. She didn't chase you or try to harm you? Any of you?"
As she asked the question, she was already sure of it. Abigail didn't want their attention. Not like she wanted Dahlia's. The realization didn't make her feel special, so much as targeted. When the boys all shook their heads, admitting with manly grunts that, no, Abigail was only scary as fuck, Dahlia tried to take some comfort in that. If Abigail wanted to pick on somebody, better it was her than one of the boys. Dahlia could take it. She had to. She was the boss. The resolution made her calmer. It gave her direction.
"All right. So all she's done is be creepy as shit."
Gabe read her better than she thought.
"What about you, Dal? Has she ever hurt you?"
"No, just scared me half to death. Well, I hit my head once when she scared me out of the tub and I fell," she added, so it sounded like full disclosure. "But that's the worst of it."
She didn't mention that Abigail had tried to do worse, and she didn't say anything about the carved-up message in the attic, or how she'd wondered if the ghost could carve up bones the same way. She didn't see any reason to. Instead, Dahlia concluded,
"She's only scary. We can work around that. So here's what we're doing now, boys. First of all, scratch the attic. There's nothing good up there, I checked."
The look Gabe shot her said he wouldn't tell anyone about the carving if she didn't. Bobby and Brad didn't need to know.
"Second, plan to wrap up before dark. Fuck this place and Abigail right along with it. We're getting a couple of hotel rooms. Bobby, you and Gabe can share, and Brad, you and me can bunk together, unless you want to front something with your own money. We'll get something with two beds."
Brad was not bothered by the sleeping suggestions. If anything, it came as a relief. But the time frame worried him.
"Do you think we can get the place cleared out by then?"
His eyebrows were all knotted up, and Dahlia wanted to think it was all about the job, but it probably wasn't.
"No, but I don't give a damn."
She was surprised to hear herself say it, and even more surprised to know it wasn't bravado and bullshit.
"We'll get enough of it done, and that's what matters. We'll buckle down, get organized, and do what we can. The rest can wait for Daddy in the morning, and we can spend all day tomorrow tying up loose ends."
"He's gonna think we're crazy," Gabe said. Dahlia didn't give a damn about that either.
"Only if we're lucky. If he comes to town and the house stays quiet, yeah, he'll think we're crazy.
but if he meets the resident poltergeist, he'll understand why I'm with Augusta Withrow. Why, if it were up to me, I'd burn this place to the ground and run.
Bobby's gaze swayed from side to side, like he was looking for someplace to spit for emphasis.
Let the whole world think we're crazy. I don't care.
Actually, he sat down on the side of the bed.
That gives me an idea. We've all got phones, right? And those phones have all got cameras. I say we keep them close at hand and whip them out if shit goes south.
So you can...
what?
Sell the footage? Dahlia flipped her palms up in the universal gesture of, what the fuck?
So we can have the footage. So if Uncle Chuck thinks we're idiots, we can point to it and say, see, weird shit happened, and it was bad, and we weren't jumping at shadows.
Brad sat down on the edge of the dresser. It groaned, but held him.
That's not a terrible idea. See? Even the nerd thinks it's a plan.
Yeah, I do. Because you know why every damn cable station has its own damn ghost hunting show?
Wait, not every channel? Gabe sort of asked.
Yes, every last one of them, Brad confirmed.
Not just the science fiction channel, but travel channels, true crime channel, shit. Probably C-SPAN has one. I know for a fact the Animal Channel does. And it's a riot, you know? Because nobody ever catches anything on camera, except for shadows and little lights that could come from anywhere.
So what are the odds? He asked, half earnest and half tap dancing on the edge of hysteria.
That any of us would actually catch anything.
Bobby snorted.
Son, you ever see the Blair Witch Project?
Don't call me son.
And that was fiction, you idiot. In real life, real people, real cameras. They don't catch shit. It's like the cameras are some kind of talisman keeping the supernatural at bay. If we all keep our phones or our camera phones running,
Dahlia cut him off.
Then we'll all be out of battery life in a couple of hours.
He gave her a look like he wanted to kill her.
I have a regular camera.
Fine, then use that. If there's any chance that a camera will scare her off, it's worth trying. We have regular old digital cameras in the equipment stash.
All right, everybody. Use your phones, use the cameras in the stash, and keep your things charged up if you can. If I'm going to get chased away by a ghost, I want some proof that I'm not a goddamn crybaby. So either we stay ghost-free, or we walk away with proof of the afterlife. It's not exactly a win-win, but I'll take it.
We can put them around the house, swap them out, change the batteries, Brad pressed. One on the mantle, one looking at the stairs, one in the bathrooms.
I think we only have two, but between those and the phones, we can get the place covered. Either Abigail will show herself, or we'll have a nice, peaceful day of hard-ass manual labor, she declared.
She opened the bedroom door without any resistance from Aunt Hazel, stepped into the hall, pulled out her phone, and took a deep breath. 13. Dahlia stood on the front porch, surveying the rain, the carriage house, the disassembled barn, the blue tarp with rocks on top, and a corpse underneath.
Open up the trucks, and let's start tearing this place down.
Gabe was usually the first to get moving, but this time he hesitated.
I don't know, Dahl. The trucks are heavy, and it was hell to pay bringing them up so far into the yard. Me and Dad were talking, and maybe we should suck it up and drive them back to solid ground. We ain't made of sugar. We won't melt in the rain.
Both of those things are true, baby, but not everything we want to save can stand getting wet.
And what solid ground would you recommend? The mountain is turning to swamp right in front of us.
We could go out to the asphalt road and leave the trucks there, Bobby proposed. Pull them off to the side so they won't block traffic.
Brad leaned on the railing and gestured out at the vast expanse of lawn.
That's half a mile away. How are we supposed to load them with the real heavy items? The furniture, the floor, and the windows? The dollies won't be any use to us.
not across all that mud and monkey grass.
Then we don't load them at all, not yet,
Dahlia declared.
She was back on firmer footing, and it felt good, even as the memory of a black smoke thing with knife-sharp nails lingered behind her eyes.
We take the heavy stuff down to the sitting room and stack it up there. If we fill that up, we'll start cramming it into the parlor across the foyer. We'll leave it that way for now, and load the trucks when the weather permits. Boys, I know you just went to a lot of trouble to bring them up close, but you're probably right. Take them back out to the road so they don't get stuck in the Withrow Swamp, and we'll wind up stranded here. Come sundown, we'll lock up the house, grab some umbrellas, and make for the trucks. Tomorrow's gonna suck, but it won't suck as bad as another overnight in this hellhole.
She half expected Bobby to make some obnoxious joke about how she'd seen too many of Brad's ghost hunting shows. But he didn't say a word. All he did was nod, pull his keys out of his damp hoodie pocket, and tell his son,
Doll left that big blue and white umbrella down in the foyer to dry. Why don't you grab it?
Brad took his phone out and fiddled with the camera's settings.
I'll get my charging cord, and I'll prop this thing up wherever I'm working. I'm just gonna let it record and record and record.
You do that, sweetheart. I'll get mine ready, too, in case you're right.
Any port in a storm, that's what Daddy would say if he were here, and if he believed her.
Oh, I'm right. You'll see. Cameras are practically magic. They'll keep this polterbitch away.
She ratcheted a smile into place and held it there.
If you catch her on camera, you can sell the footage and pay off your student loans ahead of schedule.
When he was gone, Dahlia lingered. But Hazel didn't reappear, so she went back to the master bedroom. This time, she didn't brace the door behind her. Hazel was helpful. Hazel would open her room if it needed opening. She relied on this thought and propped herself up on it. The little crew wasn't alone in this, strangers in a house full of teeth, and not everything that lurked was murderous. Blessings counted.
In the bedroom, where Dahlia had spent the first two nights on the job, the bay window seat was ruined. Rain had come in through the busted pane, and water had soaked it down to the supports. It wasn't a shame, she didn't think. They would have never gotten that whole thing out in one piece, even if her dad was bringing the big lift and the big trailer. It was too high up to cut it down safely. One way or another, it was doomed to ruin. In the end, water was just as dignified as a wrecking ball. For some reason, that thought prompted her to try her dad again. He might answer, and she wanted to hear his voice. He did answer. On the second ring.
Dahlia, everything all right?
Yes and no. She answered, almost unreasonably relieved to hear him. The job is going all right, and we're on track to have, well, almost everything wrapped up by the time you get here in the morning, but we can't stay here anymore. We have to get a couple of hotel rooms tonight. Bobby and Gabe can bunk together, and I'll get something with a pair of beds for me and Brad. I'll find someplace cheap. She might have rambled further, but he asked,
Did something happen?
Lots of some things have happened. I told you, it's not safe here.
He was quiet for a few seconds.
I don't understand. It's not safe how? Is it the electrics or mold or...
If it was that easy, I would have said so. Daddy, I told you already.
We're not alone. You want me to spend a few $100 on hotels because you're afraid of ghosts?
This is more than a ghost. It's something else. And between you and me,
she checked over each shoulder, but the guys were off working their respective jobs.
I'm afraid it's going to hurt somebody.
Why?
It's been messing with us. I don't know how strong it is, and I don't want to find out.
If it's just the money you're worried about, then fuck it. I've got a credit card and I'll pay for it myself.
His silence suggested she'd hit a nerve.
Daddy, it's only a couple of $100, if that much. This ain't Manhattan. I can take care of it.
You shouldn't have to. And one way or another, if you pay for it, I'm paying for it. Now, tell me the truth, doll. Is the house a score or a bust?
From a money standpoint, it's golden. We already have enough in the trucks to break you even, I bet. And we haven't done hardly anything on the house itself. That's just the chestnut and the goodies from the carriage house.
Jesus, I hope you're right. This place has to keep us afloat. We need to bleed it dry and take home every scrap, you understand?
All too well. When you get here, we'll scrape this baby clean. It'll probably take us from dawn to dusk, but we'll get every last thing, dump it all at the shop, and sleep in our own beds. Once we get it all parted out and cataloged, we might not get a nickel for every penny, but we ought to double our money easy.
I love the sound of it. And I appreciate all the hard work you've done on this one. It sounds like, I guess, it hasn't been easy.
Worst job ever.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're saving some for me. How far behind schedule are you, really?
She sighed and thought about it. Honestly, we could use another 2 days besides this one. We haven't been able to yank all the boards off the barn, and we can't pull the floors yet because we're moving the trucks out to the main road.
Why the hell would you do that?
It's been raining for days. The Withrow property is a swamp. If we don't move the trucks now, we'll never get them out of here without a tow. If it dries out tomorrow, we'll bring them back. If it doesn't, you can use the forklift to tote stuff between the house and the road.
So it's not the ghosts what slowed you down?
The ghosts are only a problem at night. Mostly. During the day, we've kept busy as planned. We've been working around the weather, trying to prioritize. But there's only so much we can do while the bottom's falling out. I'm sorry, but the worst of it will be waiting for you.
When I get there, you really think we can catch up?
She hesitated. Probably. I think, in a perfect world, yes. If not, we'll return on Friday to back cleanup on the details. It all depends on the weather and whether or not you want to drive back down or help me pay for another night in the hotel.
Rock and a hard place.
Maybe we'll get lucky, and from here on out, everything will go smoother than whale shit through an ice floe.
Here's hoping.
The line went quiet. It was time to wrap up, and they both knew it. Dahlia took the lead. Anyway, Daddy, we're getting a hotel tonight, but don't worry about the money. The house is a treasure chest, and we're going to raid the shit out of it. Even if we don't grab every board and tile on the way out the door, Barry won't have to kill you or anything.
He'll think about it.
I'll protect you, she promised. Just get here good and early, and we'll do our best. You're going to love this place. Except for the poltergeists.
I liked it better when he called them ghosts.
To be fair, I think it's just the one poltergeist. But one is too many, so...
I'll be there in the morning.
They hung up. Dahlia felt both better, because there was an end in sight, and worse, because the stakes were so very high, and there was still so much to be done. $40,000, that's what Chuck had paid for the rights. Almost twice what she made in a year. She could have laughed. Well, if it all went tits up, she could always ditch her new apartment and move back home. Wouldn't that be grand? Divorced, pushing 40, and living at home with her daddy. Form an orderly queue to the left, gents. Downstairs, Brad had returned to banging around in the kitchen. It sounded like he was packing up the non-essentials. In another 15 minutes, Bobby and Gabe returned, soaked but successful.
The trucks are out past the gateposts, Gabe announced. There's lots of space for cars to pass around them, but we didn't see a single one the whole time we parked and locked them.
Dahlia came downstairs to join them. Way to go, guys. Now, will y'all two please get started on the fireplaces? If we get them both out easy, that's half of Dad's investment back right there. I'll drag down what's savable from upstairs in the bedrooms and Hazel's room. Everything I can carry.
Is any of that furniture worth taking?
Bobby asked. Most of it's late deco or early nouveau, and it's all in good shape.
Is that a yes?
It's, probably. It's a definitely on Hazel's vanity, though. I think I recognize the manufacturer. Or there might be a label inside. We'll see.
What's Brad doing? Gabe wanted to know.
He's breaking down the kitchen. When he's finished packing our stuff and checking for hidden treasure, he can help me carry the big things down. It was momentum, the way she rolled downhill into business mode. The work was something solid and predictable. It was manageable. All she had to do was manage it. Okay,
Fireplaces. This one is a lot smaller than the one in the living area, so take it out first, and do it as fast as you safely can. I'll start piling furniture into the sitting room, and then I'll fill up the space behind you.
Then what? Asked Gabe, who was already rifling through a tool bag.
Then lunch. At least, I hope you'll be finished with this one by then. The stone is going to take you longer than you think, trust me on that. But once you got both surrounds free and taped up in the padding, move on to the other fireplaces. Their mantles are rosewood, and some of those tiles are in real good shape. People will eat them up.
After that?
It was Bobby's turn to ask for direction. After that? The stained glass and the Gothic windows, except for the rooms where we've stacked tomorrow's load. And the doors, and the hardware, and the built-ins, and the stair rails, and... Jesus H. Christ, we have a lot of work to do. But it was doable. When in doubt, concentrate on the job. Abigail couldn't chase them all at once, not while they were working in different rooms and hustling in different directions. Hazel had said she wasn't so strong during the day, so maybe the worst of it was over for now. Even if it wasn't, there was nothing else to be done about it. All Dahlia could do was forget the ghosts or ignore the hell out of them. Remember the payday. Remember Daddy up in Nashville and the store and the stock that was getting stale. Forget the eyeless thing in the attic. Forget the woman-shaped shadow in the bathrooms. Remember to be careful with the corner blocks, because those nice ones with the carved patterns are worth more than the simple bullseye models. Her fear and worry didn't magically go away, but she packed them away in a box, taped it up, and put it in the corner. It was just one more thing she could unpack and process when she got back home. It wouldn't do anyone any good right now. It was only in the way. So, remember the tiles, and stack them up neat. If you break them, set them aside, but don't toss them. Go for the built-ins if you think you can pull them out of the wall in only a piece or two. Leave them if they have Phillips head screws. It means they're newer than the 1930s, and they won't be worth the trouble. Forget the mirrors. Forget the broken glass. Forget the sounds of doors opening and closing when nobody's there. Remember the cameras. The digital ones have movie mode. You can set them where people are working, like Brad suggested. He aimed one right at himself, like it was casting a spell that would protect him from all evil. For his sake, Dahlia hoped he was right. If you don't catch anything, you work in peace. If you catch something, you're not crazy, and you're famous on cable TV. Over the next few hours, they made a dent in the list, but didn't break through it. Lunch was a hasty affair, cleaning up the last of the lunch meat and cheese, powering through cans of Chef Boyardee, and scarfing down Little Debbie's. Better to eat it than to toss it all, or load it up and take it back to Nashville. Maybe if they were feeling especially celebratory, or desperate, they'd go get supper someplace before they checked into a hotel. As lunch wound down, Bobby opened the fridge to reveal a couple of six-packs.
Better finish these up, too.
Dahlia put out her hands and made grabby fingers at the beer. Ordinarily, I'd yell at you about drinking on the job, but if ever a job required a drink, this is it. Give me one. Hell, give me two, and I'll take one upstairs. The bottles clinked against each other as she climbed to the second floor. She'd already removed the three small stained glass windows and covered the exposed openings with plastic, though she'd need help with the large one downstairs. She'd gotten the cute pre-war medicine cabinet from the hallway bathroom, but she was leaving the clawfoot tub. It was a five-footer, and you could get those damn near anywhere. She'd toted all the light furniture downstairs and the keep-worthy heavier items with Brad's help. There was nothing left up there but the big stuff in Hazel's room, which she'd been saving for last. Brad finished the contents of his beer and set the empty bottle on the floor.
You want a hand with that vanity?
Not yet. Give me a few minutes to go through the contents. Could you bring me a box?
How big?
Big enough to hold a bunch of shit, but not too big for me to carry. Bring me a couple of them, actually. I'd appreciate it. Only a few of the flat, packed cardboard boxes had made it out of the trucks dry, but they'd have to do. She had a fat roll of packing tape on a handle dispenser to assemble them, and she didn't think Hazel had left so much behind that she'd need more than two boxes to hold it all. Moths had gotten into the left set of vanity drawers. The grayish-brown fluff in the bottom one might have once been feathers from a fascinator, or wool gloves, or silk handkerchiefs, almost anything. Now it was moth shit. She dumped the drawers, one after another, into the plastic trash bag she'd brought for just such a purpose. Brad soon returned with the flat-packed, corrugated cardboard boxes. He assembled one for Dahlia while she worked her way through the other drawers, collecting the gloves and hats that remained. Why the moths hit one side and not the other? There was no telling. She picked up one of the dapper little hats and tried it on. It sat jauntily on her head, perched to the side. "I love your style," she said to Hazel, in case the ghost was watching. "I hope you don't mind if I keep one of these, and a clutch or two." Like she ever had any reason to carry a clutch. Times were changing. Maybe she'd go out of her way to find a clutch-worthy occasion. "A nut out," Brad suggested, tugging out another strip of tape and pressing it flat. "Everybody needs one, now and again." "Sure, a night out." The wardrobe backing was made of cedar, so the clothes there were in somewhat better shape. Much was gone, but everything that had been touching the wood was as intact as you could expect, given how long it'd been hanging there. Brad gasped and dropped the tape dispenser. "Holy shit, what was that?"
"What?"
Dahlia turned around. The pushed-aside box, with all her fear and worry in it, the one she'd left in a corner of her head, shook and rattled and wobbled for attention. She refused to look at it. Brad fumbled to retrieve his camera from his shirt pocket, where the lens peeked out for recording's sake. He aimed it at the mirror. He swept it around the room. He pointed it at the mirror again. "I saw something."
"In here? It's probably just Hazel," she said.
When nothing further happened, he sighed and put the camera phone back into his pocket. "Whatever it was, it's gone now. I told you, the cameras are magic for keeping these things away."
"Maybe Hazel just doesn't like having your picture taken."
"That's fine with me. I don't really want to see her. I don't want to see any of them." He went back to the tape, running a long strip down the bottom edge of the cardboard. It spooled out with a ripping sound, then a loud snip when he cut it off. "Even if I can't prove it, we're working in a real-life haunted house. I don't get why you aren't freaking out and running."
"You don't think I'm freaking out?"
She shook her head and tossed the contents of the last vanity drawer into the box. "If I wasn't freaking out, we'd be here through Saturday, picking up every toothpick, doorknob, and nail. We'd be staying in the house tonight like brave but stupid sitting ducks. No, sweetheart, I am well and truly freaking out."
"But you could leave. We could all leave."
"You could leave," she said flatly. "Pick up your shit and go if you want. All it'll cost you is your job. But if I pick up and leave, it's not just my job. It's the whole business out the window. We're all out on our asses, me and Gabe and Bobby and my dad, James and Barry and everybody else. So, yeah, I'm freaking out. I'm packing up early, and I'm calling my daddy to come help because I'm scared. And then I'm making a run for it. But right now, when there's still daylight burning and work that needs doing, no, I'm not leaving."
Brad fiddled with his tape dispenser, looking halfway sheepish and halfway hopeful.
"I could go, couldn't I? If you're that scared of a ghost in a bathroom, yes, knock yourself out."
For a minute, she thought he was going to leave a Brad-shaped hole in the door, especially when he said,
"Maybe I am that scared."
But eventually he added,
"You put it that way, it sounds like chickening out."
Before she could accuse him of exactly that and demand that he cover up the soldier on his way home, he added,
"But I'd have to get a cab and rent a car or something like that. And I like my job, mostly, except for the ghosts."
"The first one's always the hardest." She closed one of the wardrobe's doors and opened the other to see if the moths had left anything good behind.
"What was your first work set, Ghost?" he asked. She paused, momentarily distracted by a long knit dress that was last worn circa 1960. She pulled it off the hanger and examined it. The fabric had stretched a little, but not too badly. She folded it gently and put it in the box.
"Dahlia."
She cleared her throat.
It was a teenage boy. He'd killed himself in the basement of this old farmhouse, probably back in the 1950s. He was still down there, in spirit. He liked to unplug things and short out the equipment when no one was looking.
"Did you see him?"
"Only once. And once was enough."
They worked together in silence for a few minutes more.
"Hey, Dahlia,
you don't think there's any chance that the thing up there in the attic, the one that followed you into the hall, or the thing in the bathroom?"
"Same thing. It's Abigail."
"Are you sure she can't hurt us?" There were drawers inside the wardrobe on the bottom level. She pulled one open and thought about lying.
"Just because she hasn't hurt anyone yet doesn't mean she's not capable of it. That's why we're leaving at sundown."
"That's the sanest thing I've ever heard you say." She nearly smiled, but didn't.
"I'm not sure I can take that as a compliment, but you have to be practical about these things."
"Practical about the undead.
What else would you suggest? When in trouble, when in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout? The fuck would that accomplish?"
"It beats pretending that everything's fine and nothing's going on."
Fast as lightning and twice as hot, she snapped, "I'm not pretending anything!" Her heart pounded, and she clutched the fragile clothes, then unclenched her fists. It didn't do much to calm her. She hadn't packed up the fear quite well enough, and it was leaking back into her head, her hands, and her voice. "I'm just keeping my shit together because someone has to. Jesus, Brad, you're a Georgia boy. Ghost shouldn't be news to you. All of us down here, we're not just living on battlefields, we're living on graveyards. Even the fake ones have bodies in them, don't you know?" His voice shook when he said,
"Only because I dug one up."
She flung a capelet into the box and yanked out another dress, this one the color of ferns. She mostly left it folded and hurled that in there, too. She collected everything she'd chosen so far and rose to her feet, wiping her hands on the seat of her jeans.
"God damn it, just go, if this is too much for you."
But he rose to his feet, too, and dug in his heels.
"Only have to make it until dark, right?"
Exhausted by this entire line of conversation, she sighed.
"Yes." "And how long is it? Till dark."
He clutched at the shirt pocket with the camera phone, reassuring himself that it was still running.
"Another 6 or 7 hours, so you might want to put the phone away for a while. It'll start feeling dark before that, when the sun falls behind the mountain, but the sun won't really set until 8-ish. And come 8, we're out of here."
"More like 7:30, she vowed. "Can you stick it out that long?"
"Without having a nervous breakdown. Now make no promises."
The quiver in his eyes said he was halfway there already, so a promise wouldn't mean much anyway.
"Let's hold off on the nervous breakdowns. If you have a nervous breakdown, you might drop this vanity when we walk it down the stairs, and then I'd have to kill you, and then I'd go to jail, and no one would be very happy. I'd rather just get Bobby or Gabe to help me. If you're gonna run around squeaking like a girl every time you hear a footstep, you can't explain."
"Footsteps I can ignore. Dead soldiers who stand there and look sad. Fine. That guy wasn't bothering anybody."
"How about apparitions in mirrors?"
He thought about it.
"You said Hazel was a nice lady."
"She seems to be. I think she wants to help. Now, do me a favor, dear. Put the last box together and start going through the bureau drawers. Anything that's in one piece, add it to the stash." Downstairs, the sound of chisels and pry bars gave way to power tools and high fives as the first fireplace was pulled free of the wall and then packed up for shipping.
Gabe and Bobby relocated the sleeping bags and duffel bags and messenger bags and the last of the personal items to the far side of the room in the main living area, up against the staircase, and got to work on the larger fireplace, a delicate mission in marble. Meanwhile, Dahlia and Brad finished up the last of the upstairs furniture, grunting and swearing the big pieces down the stairs and stashing them in the parlor, which was filling up fast. Then, onto the top floor windows. Not everything was coming with them, but in Brad and Bobby's former rooms, there were matching frames with leaded glass in traditional patterns, with a sprinkle of green and yellow squares for pop. They came out easy, in one piece. Only one crack, and that little part could be replaced. Fuck the tragic pink bathroom tiles. Even Bobby had come to agree. The bathrooms were a waste. Dahlia and Brad took the hardware off the doors next, wrapping each set in newspaper to keep it all together, then boxing it all up. Next came the doors themselves, along with what decorative hinges remained. Anything modern went into the scrap pile. Pry bars and saws came out, and the heart of pine upstairs was extracted one plank at a time. What couldn't be saved was left behind, leaving islands of wood surrounded by subflooring and joists. The second floor was as stripped as it was going to get, right around the time Bobby and Gabe announced that they needed a hand with the big marble surround. There was one big crack and a couple of small ones. No big deal, but it took a lot of love and duct tape and padding to get the massive thing ready for the truck and out into the parlor. On to the rest of the first floor. Two more stained glass panels, one in amazing shape, one in iffy condition. Bubble-wrapped and set aside, with plastic tarp over the holes left behind, since the rain was still drumming, and they were still planning to take the floors. More gorgeous trim, with carved blocks and filigree. All of it oak. The pry bars picked it all down, and Dahlia stacked it all up. The afternoon wore on, and the rain kept coming. The thunder and lightning quit, and it wasn't yet freezing, but she thought she heard the intermittent patter of ice mixed in with the droplets. She wouldn't swear to it, but she wouldn't doubt it either. Everyone ditched their hoodies and jackets, but kept the flannels and long sleeves. Even manual labor couldn't keep them perfectly warm. Around 5:30, Gabe and Bobby successfully removed the ornate built-in cabinet in the dining area, and with Dahlia and Brad's help, got it wrapped in moving blankets and duct tape. With all hands on deck and the help of a pair of dollies, they relocated it to the sitting room in two pieces. They had to leave it lying by the entrance, for there was nowhere else to put it. The sitting room was stuffed to the gills, and there wasn't any space left in the parlor either. "But we still have the big stained glass window in the dining room. That's easily worth a couple grand, so we have to take extra care. And then there's the room dividers, the parlor built-ins, and the stair rails," Dahlia noted, mentally trying to imagine the jigsaw puzzle of overnight storage. "Nah, we can skip the parlor built-ins." Brad took off his gloves and emptied them, one at a time, spilling dust, splinters, and plaster bits onto the floor. "The screws were wrong. Phillips, from top to bottom."
"Right. Thank you for remembering."
She frowned in that direction anyway, spying the shelving through the stacks of loot waiting to be loaded up.
"Someone did a real nice job of making it look original, damn him. But it's just as well, because we're running out of time for today. I am happy to scratch something off the list guilt-free. We do have to grab those room dividers, though. I already checked them, and they're in real good shape. You'll have to cut them out from the wall, but they'll make great bookcases or cabinets."
Gabe cleared his throat.
Room dividers?
Those things that look like waist-high, built-in bookcases on either side of the wall between the parlor and the foyer? There used to be another set in front of the sitting room, but someone pulled them out years ago. There's nothing left but a couple of shadows on the floor.
"So now we're down to the big window and the room dividers,"
Bobby counted off.
"And the transom with the roses. Can't leave without that, but it ought to be an easy grab, even if it's painted shut, and I think it might be.
So, big window first, then I'll get the transom. You boys get the last two mantles removed and secured, then move on to the stairs, if you have time."
"What about the rest of these floors?" Gabe asked, tapping one foot on the wood for emphasis.
Fuck 'em, she said. They'll wait for Daddy tomorrow. We got about 90 minutes before we pack ourselves up and head out for the nearest Motel 6. If we finish up sooner, we leave sooner. I don't know about you guys, but I'm done with this place for today.
I'm done with it forever, Brad concluded.
Forever it is, she agreed, or until tomorrow, whichever comes first. So let's go, final push. We can do this, but we'll have to hurry. In 30 minutes, she had the rose glass transom removed and wrapped, and the latter moved to the dining room to help address the oversized window with its lovely stained scenery. In another 15 minutes, the boys had finished with the room dividers, and they'd been moved to the foyer. Not even Dahlia's Tetris powers could fit them anywhere else. 5 minutes more, and they'd positioned the other two ladders beneath the window and formulated a plan. Who would stand where, who would use which tools, and who would stand beneath. 20 minutes more, and the marvelously solid window was loose and ready to come out. Bobby was outside on the porch, bracing the window from that side. Dahlia was on one ladder, and Brad was on the other. Gabe stood below, working the straps and pulley that would support the heavy old piece as it descended. 1, 2, 3, and the great window came down intact. Thank God. They taped it and wrapped it again, then let it join the room dividers in the foyer. Brad checked his phone, then slipped it back into his front pocket, with the camera lens peeking out.
Another hour before 7:30. You said we could hit the road at 7:30, right?
Right, Dahlia confirmed. Gabe looked pained by the whole thing.
But there's still so much to do.
He wasn't wrong, but the itch to go and the need to stay went to war, and the staircase was right there in the middle. It wouldn't be a big deal. If the rails came apart easy enough, they could pop the whole thing into pieces in, half an hour between them. Bobby saw her critically appraising the stairs and didn't wait for the order.
Okay, fine. One last thing, but only if it comes out easy. If it don't come apart like Legos, we can skip it and leave it for tomorrow.
Dahlia was either relieved to see him take the initiative or annoyed that he was right. She couldn't tell which. As it was, her dad was going to give her an earful when he arrived and saw how much work was left to be done. But he wasn't here, was he? He hadn't seen the yellow dress, the dead boy, the shadow with knives in its hands, and blackness in whatever was left of its heart. However, the stair rail was big and obvious and chestnut, and relatively easy to break down. It'd be stupid to walk away from it when the sun was still technically up. Okay, the stair rails and spindles, she relented, and then we're out of here, because we can pull up the steps tomorrow, after Dad takes a look around upstairs. Hey, could someone turn on the rest of the lights? It's getting dark in here. Brad flinched.
You're sure it's not dark until 8-something?
Yes, I'm sure. It's the clouds and the mountain shadow, just like it's been all day. Flip every last switch, get yourself a Sawzall, and let's see if we can pull this thing apart on the fly. But goddamn, it was gloomy in there. Even with the oversized pendant light hissing and popping above, brightening the room with the smell of burning dust and old bulbs. And even when the rails lifted up and off as easy as pie, hardly any sawing required, it was so very dark for what ought to be late afternoon. Everything was the color of not quite dawn or just past dusk, blue-gray and orange from the incandescent lights. The crew worked fast, pausing now and again to flip another switch. Turn on the hall light, turn on the foyer light, turn on the light in the dining room. Yes, it's far away, but it felt like nothing could cut through this grim and dismal atmosphere. If they didn't press every button and spark every lamp, it was like they weren't even trying. So they tried, and they cut, and they popped out the spindles one by one, stacking them like cordwood by the faceless fireplace in the living area, until the stairs were open and naked, with nothing to hold on to, should anybody go up or down them.
Talk about your open concept, Dahlia observed.
The ceilings were so high, and the stairs so tall, it was almost enough to give her vertigo. But it was only a little trick of the mind, now that the banister was gone. Rationally, she knew this. Regardless,
She surreptitiously hugged the wall near where she was standing at the top. Gabe stood beside her, his hands on his hips.
"Damn," he said. "We should have done that sooner. It would have made moving the big stuff down a lot easier."
"I know," Dahlia sighed. "I wasn't thinking."
"You were thinking about other things," Brad said.
"Or that. So, is this everything? Do we have it all out of the way? Are we ready to run?" She was answered by a whistling rumble from outside as the storm coiled tight around the mountain. The wind shrieked through the chimneys and screeched around the house's corners, pulling at the slices of plastic tarp she'd used to patch the broken glass and other empty places. It was cold, and it was wet, and the air tasted like a tomb.
"Fuck this," Gabe declared. "Let's pack it up and move it out."
As if in response, the tarp at the end of the hall, the one covering the window there and strapped into place with duct tape so it shouldn't have moved at all, ripped free. It wasn't possible, Dahlia didn't think. She'd used enough tape to silence a choir. All this time, it kept out the water and the wind, too, but now it was flapping toward them, animated by the storm and by something else. Not just the blustery air, not just the swirling rain pushing inside the house. There was something beneath it, swelling and flailing, the ragged edges of plastic and tape rising and falling, sticking temporarily to the walls and ripping free again. The sheet whipped about, up and down, left and right, bouncing around in the hallway. But there was more beneath it than the frothy air. A face pressed against it, and a hand, a mouth, a scream. Gabe froze, his mouth open, sucking on a gasp that wouldn't come out. Dahlia grabbed his arm. "Down! Get down, now!" But he was big and heavy and rooted to the spot. "You first," he squeaked, pushing her past him, setting her on the steps and almost shoving her along them. The helpful motion broke whatever spell held him trapped in place. But not fast enough. Not before the plastic, moving like a child in a bedsheet at Halloween. No, not a child, but something bigger, something that moved as if it was all limbs and no body. Not before that plastic swept down upon the spot where Dahlia had stood and where Gabe was standing now, on top of the stairs where there were no more rails. Then the sheet hit him, and for a split second, Dahlia saw arms pushing through it, reaching for him, hands grasping at him. No, they were trying to push past him. The hands were reaching for her, but she was long gone, halfway to the bottom by then. The thing from the window hit him harder than a flap of wet plastic and stringy tape ever could. It pushed him, and he stumbled. Dahlia had time to climb back up one step, almost two steps. She had time to graze his hand as he tripped, tangled and confused. He could feel those other hands, the hands that weren't human. She could see it on his face. He could see that gaping, shrieking mouth that spoke with the sound of a storm on a mountain. He saw it as he reached out and almost touched the pendant lamp. Not that it would have held him more than a moment, even if he'd caught it. He watched as the thing charged him, his eyes fixed upon it, all the way to the oak floor, a story and a half below. The plastic fluttered and sank, light as a garbage bag, empty as the house itself. But not Gabe. Gabe crashed. 14. It could have been worse, or so Dahlia told herself, as she staggered down the steps to join Bobby and Brad, who were already circling Gabe. It could have been worse, because Gabe was yelling his head off and writhing, even as his father tried to tell him to be still, hold still, goddammit. That meant he was alive, and his neck wasn't broken, and he was mostly just pissed off and righteously scared, and probably hurt, but not in a life-threatening fashion. Or so she hoped and prayed with every rushed, tumbled, stumbled step. She tripped at the bottom and caught herself on her hands. She got up fast and scrambled toward Gabe, who had finished hollering, and moved on to shrieking in a pitch high enough to scare off rodents.
My legs!
Your ankles,
Brad corrected him. She guessed it sounded like the thing to do, like maybe an ankle didn't seem as big as a leg. Maybe this was his dumbass way of trying to help, to offer a little perspective, convince him that things weren't as bad as they seemed. But things sure as shit weren't good. Dahlia flung herself into the living area, falling to her knees.
Kate, baby, he landed on your feet. Like a motherfucking cat, I did. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yes, but he'd landed heavy, on his feet or his ankles or legs or whatever. One was definitely broken, and one might or might not be, but he'd seen better days. His right hand was turning purple, too, where he'd caught himself upon the landing. Apparently his legs hurt so bad that he hadn't noticed the problem with his hand yet. Dahlia wasn't about to point it out, not while one of his feet was aiming in the wrong direction entirely. If he wanted to dedicate all his paying attention to his feet, that was fine. Keep it localized. Give him something to focus on.
What happened? Brad asked, his own voice an octave higher than usual. What the hell was that? Something came right at him. You saw it. You all saw it.
The plastic. It was just the plastic from the window,
Gabe gasped. He alternated between wanting to clutch and hold his ankles and not wanting to touch them or let anyone else touch them either.
Oh, God, what did I do?
You fell, that's all. It's like you said, Dahlia rambled as she pulled out her cell phone. The plastic came off the window, that's all it was, and I'm gonna... Hang on, I'm calling 911. You've broken at least one thing, baby. I'm gonna get some help. The bit about 911 was meant to help, but it sent him into a panic.
No, don't do that. It's not that bad,
Gabe screeched. Dahlia had known the boy all his life, and she knew he was panicking because 911 meant this was a real emergency, not just a piece of plastic or a shadow or a cold spot in a house where the ghosts play games with the doors. 911 meant the kind of danger nobody can ignore or make excuses for or pretend isn't happening. It didn't matter. They needed help, and she was going to get it.
It is that bad. It's at least that bad, Brad said, helping absolutely no one's level of alarm.
Bobby had gotten Gabe sitting up. Gabe leaned against him, alternately moaning and complaining to high heaven and squealing when the pain spikes drove down deep. His dad clutched him around the chest.
Hang on, bud. Dahlia's gonna get you an ambulance.
Dahlia's first call dropped. The second was picked up by an operator asking, 911, what is your emergency? She tried to keep herself calm, since she couldn't keep anyone else that way.
There's been an accident. We need an ambulance.
What kind of accident?
It was a work accident. We're a salvage crew, working on a house. My cousin has at least one broken leg, maybe two. He needs help, right now. Sooner than that, if you can swing it.
The patter of typing continued in the background.
Where are you located? We're near the bottom of Lookout Mountain, just above St. Elmo.
She gave the street address, though she hadn't seen any indicator of it anyplace on the house, and she had no idea if it'd actually appear on anybody's GPS.
What about you? Where are you located?
She asked the operator.
I'm at the regional call center. Please give me your phone number in case we're disconnected.
Dahlia complied, keeping one eye on Gabe, who was going pale and starting to sweat.
You have to hurry. He's going into shock.
I'm in the process of contacting local emergency support services. Please stay on the line.
Listen, lady, is there any chance you can let me talk to the local support guys myself? The house we're at, it's tricky to find, but a local might know which one I'm talking about.
The call promptly beeped and dropped, right as another hard, billowing gust made the house shudder and lean, unless that part was all in her imagination. Dahlia was about to swear, but the operator called back immediately.
Ma'am? I'm here. I'm still here. You have to send somebody. It might be tricky. We have to get my cousin out to the main road. You'll never get an ambulance up here, not with the rain. There's no paved road up to the house.
Ma'am? Due to the storms, your local first responders are experiencing a high volume of calls. The operator dropped a tiny bit of the forced professional tone.
Power's out to half the county, and there are reports of tornadoes on the ground.
You're shitting me. They get tornadoes here?
Once in a blue moon, so don't look up. We're doing the best we can, I assure you. Please be patient, and we'll have someone out there soon.
The call dropped again, and this time, so did everything else. The world went dark with a pop so loud it made Dahlia's ears ring, a fizzing electrical bang, and then there was nothing. The lights were gone. The refrigerator stopped running. The weird background static of weather and electricity buzzed through the air and evaporated. The Withrow house was quiet and dark, except for the shocked breathing and low groaning of its occupants, blinking against the dim and fading light, for it wasn't yet sundown, but there wasn't any daylight to speak of, and the storm leached the last of the glow from the sky. Except for what Dahlia's phone said about the time, it might as well have been full-on night. She broke the uneasy, uneven quiet.
Everyone stay cool. 911 is sending somebody, okay?
Her phone rang again, displaying the emergency services designation. She answered, only to be greeted with silence and a dropped call notice.
Are you sure? Bobby asked. Did they tell you for sure that someone's on the way?
Yes, I'm sure, but it might take them a while. Hang on, I've got another idea.
She rose to her feet and walked away from them, her footsteps ringing god-awful loud on the wood. She pulled up a web browser on her phone, looked up the Chattanooga Police Department, and called them directly instead. It took forever for anyone to answer. Dahlia could feel her neck flushing and her pulse rising, but someone had to keep control. Bobby was about to lose it, Brad had lost it already, and Gabe had too much on his plate as it was.
Chattanooga Police Department.
Her voice shaking, she explained the situation as fast as she could, but the cop who answered the phone cut her off after the bit about St. Elmo.
To be clear, ma'am, there aren't any life-threatening injuries. Is that correct?
She lost her battle with inner peace.
How the fuck should I know? I'm not a doctor. At the very least, his legs are broken and the power is out.
I could give a shit about the power.
The cop responded in testy, frayed nerve kind.
You're in about the same boat as everyone else, all right? Broken legs aren't a death sentence now, are they?
But he fell a long way. He could have other injuries, she said,
not because she necessarily believed it, but because it might bring help around sooner. The cop sighed.
If 911 says you're in the queue, then you're in the queue. But I can't make you any promises, you hear me? Tell me again where you are. St. Elmo?
Kind of.
She took a crack at giving directions, then stopped.
Hey, is there any chance you were born and raised here?
Close enough. What for?
Then maybe you know the old Withrow house near the foot of Lookout Mountain. And before you tell me you can't reach it, she added quickly, I've got two strong men here with me, and we can get the kid to the paved road at the edge of the property.
That old compound? I'll be damned, they finally found someone to clear it out.
He was mumbling, like he was doing something else at the same time he was talking. Dahlia thought she heard the scratch of a pen on paper.
I'll make a note of it. Give me your number, so I can call you back if I need to, or someone else can if it comes to that.
She obliged. She looked over her shoulder to where Bobby and Brad were doing their best to be comforting, and Gabe was doing his best to keep breathing and not pass out cold. She could barely see them, except an outline. She wondered where the lanterns and flashlights were. That would be her next problem.
How long do you think it'll be?
Best case scenario, half an hour. Worst case, I honestly can't tell you. We've got every man on deck tonight, and we're doing the best we can. Somebody will call you when help is on the way, so you can start carrying the kid to the road. If there's any chance you can get him to an ER yourself, you may want to give it a shot. But if you do, call back and let me know, so I can take you off the list.
She thanked him and hung up, holding the phone with shaking fingers. She turned on the flashlight app to give them all a little more illumination.
It's a mess out there, she repeated what the cop had said. 911 won't make any promises, and the cops can't have anyone here sooner than half an hour, and it may take a whole lot longer.
He didn't say so, but I heard it between the lines.
We're going to have to take Gabe to the road.
We can put him in one of the trucks to stay dry until they get here.
No one was less thrilled about this plan than Gabe, who wheezed and moaned at the same time.
I don't know if I can make it to the trucks, doll.
You can, and you will. Your daddy and Brad and me will get you out there between us. But first, we need to wrap up those legs to keep them stable.
I can do it, Brad declared shakily.
Dahlia flashed him a dubious frown. 10 seconds ago, he'd been on the verge of hyperventilating, and now he wanted to do something useful? Do you have any first aid experience?
The Boy Scout kind, and I used to be a lifeguard, so I was certified and everything. I can do it, so just let me do it, if neither of y'all knows how.
So he wanted a job to calm him down. It worked before, and Dahlia could relate.
Fine, what do you need?
A lantern. Then get me some more of that plastic tarp, not the possessed piece of shit that jumped him, Brad specified. Rustle up something else, and the duct tape. Bring me one of those spindles from the decorative rail in the kitchen. They're little enough, and they'll work fine as a splint.
He looked down at Gabe's other leg, which was starting to swell, but didn't look half so bad as the one that was well and truly wrecked.
Bring me two, to be on the safe side.
A shock of lightning brightened the sky for half a second, then a great crack of thunder shook the house and everyone in it. Dahlia spotted one of the LED lanterns at the foot of the stairs, so she grabbed it and passed it over to Brad and Bobby.
It's too cold for a thunderstorm, Bobby protested, his teeth chattering from fear or chill Dahlia didn't know, and probably neither did he.
It's got to be too cold.
Ever hear a snow thunder?
Brad asked, accepting spindles and duct tape from Dahlia. His hands were quivering as hard as his voice, but he got to work, ignoring Gabe's groans and squeaks.
Hold him still, Bobby, he directed.
But yeah, snow thunder. It's a thing.
Dahlia couldn't watch Gabe squirm, or Bobby do his best to keep from rocking his son back and forth, holding him steady by brute force or nervous tension. She stepped away to the edge of the stairs and looked up, half expecting to see Hazel standing there, or Buddy, or even the miserable phantom of Abigail, taking some dismal pride in her work. She halfway wanted to see Abigail, if only to throw something at her, flip her the bird, or scream about what a bitch she was, for all the good it'd do them.
You were aiming for me, weren't you?
She asked, the vacant space where no ghosts bothered to materialize. Her words were as tight as a guitar string.
Why? Why won't you leave me alone?
Through gritted teeth, Gabe joked.
Stop talking to yourself, doll.
She wanted me, and you got in the way.
You think she wants?
Gabe gasped when Brad wrapped his broken leg with the first strip of tape.
She wants to kill you?
I don't know. She wants something. You three, we have to get you out of here before she gets any bigger ideas.
But you have to get out of here, too, Bobby protested, especially if you're right.
I can take it. I can take her. I want a word with that bitch.
Like you want another hole in the head, Brad muttered, his elbows rising and falling as he maneuvered the duct tape around Gabe's heavy shin and ankle. She's beat you up worse than anyone. Till now.
She snorted.
I'm still standing here, aren't I?
She caught herself. Gabe, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that.
Don't worry about it, doll. Not your fault.
He gasped more shallowly, not so much breathing as crying.
Doesn't matter whose fault, mine or Daddy's or Augusta Withrow's or anybody's. All that matters is we're getting you out of here and to a hospital.
Brad rose to his knees, then stood over Gabe.
There. That's about as good as it's going to get.
How does it feel?
Feels like hell, sir,
the boy replied.
Too bad, because we have to get you upright anyhow, Bobby declared.
He scooted out from his position, half beneath Gabe, and worked his hands under his son's armpits.
Come on. Brad, you take the right. I got the left.
Gabe shrieked, but did his best to prop himself between the two men on the one foot that wasn't utterly shattered.
Keys,
he wheezed.
Keys,
Dahlia repeated. Here's the keys to my truck. Bobby, where are yours?
Pocket, he grunted.
Brad strained beneath Gabe's shoulder.
It's pouring out there.
We won't wash away, Dahlia said grimly. We can't run, but we ought to hurry as best we can. The sun's almost completely down. I'll get the light, you boys get moving, and I'll catch up in a second.
The guys shuffled slowly, struggling to find a rhythm that would work for all three. Gabe did his best not to wail with every half-step. Brad and Bobby leaned, lunged, and worked against the sheer size of the boy. They swayed from side to side, teetering and seeking balance. They got him to the front door, and they got the door open.
Lock it behind us, Doll, Gabe called.
Why? She asked, running up behind them with one of the big lanterns. Anyone dumb enough to go inside gets what he deserves. Come on, let's go.
She followed them onto the porch, worrying every inch of the way. Gabe was maybe 6'4" and 280 pounds if he was an ounce. His father was a couple inches shorter and a couple stones lighter. Brad was not a great deal larger than Dahlia herself. By the time they'd reached the top of the porch steps, standing at the edge where sheets of rain cascaded down around them, everyone had reached the same conclusion, but no one wanted to say it out loud. Brad surrendered and said it first.
This isn't gonna work. We'll never get him all the way to the truck. Shut your mouth,
Bobby hollered over the downpour. But Gabe shook his head.
No, he's right. I can't do this. Y'all can't do this. Sit me down for Christ's sake. My feet won't hold me. My ankles. My whatever.
Brad was all too happy to comply, and even Bobby lowered Gabe reluctantly, but without complaint. Brad's arms were quivering. They hadn't gone 30 feet, and there was at least a quarter mile left to go.
What about a wheelbarrow? A dolly, Dahlia suggested desperately. We could strap you in and roll you down to the trucks like Hannibal Lecter.
Through this weather?
Bobby asked, waving at the curtain of water, then down at the flooded lawn. He was right, and she knew it. The yard wasn't just covered in puddles. It was submerged in ponds.
We have to get him to the truck. We have to try. It's only water.
It's a swamp out there, Brad argued, and it's getting worse.
He rubbed at his upper arms to loosen them up or warm them. Dahlia refused to accept it.
Gabe, what if I get your legs and the guys get your head and chest?
Gabe's pupils were huge with the dim wet light and with abject agony. He answered her with a question.
What do you weigh, doll? 130?
I'm stronger than I look, and the trucks are only on the far side of the stone pillars.
Only?
Brad squeaked.
You got any better ideas?
She snapped. He snapped back.
No, I don't.
Then we can't stay here, she insisted. The ambulance will meet us at the road.
Bobby held up his hands, signaling an idea, for good or ill.
Wait, what if I go first and flag it down? Maybe they have a wheelchair and then come get him. You think they could get a wheelchair through this mess?
Brad asked, half incredulous and half hopeful. Dahlia squinted out through the rain. Another flash of lightning showed the ruts that they'd been using for a driveway. There was gravel under that water, and she could see the grass and stones peeking through.
No, but they'll have a stretcher, or a backboard or something, and extra hands to help. If they ever get here.
Brad ran his hands through his hair, smearing it back from his forehead.
They can't just not come. It's 911. That's not how it works.
She handed him the lantern.
The whole county is in an uproar, and we're in the queue. That's all they could promise. Bobby, go ahead and make a run for it. You can wave them down, and it'll save us time if they're having trouble finding the place. The cop knew where